Hare Krishna. Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
Okay, 24. The conclusion is, therefore, that the sufferings of the representative of religion and the representative of the earth, as presented before Maharaj Parikshit, were planned to prove that Maharaj Parikshit was the ideal executive head because he knew well how to give protection to the cows, the earth, and the brahmanas, religious principles, the two pillars of spiritual advancement. Right. So religious principles means brahmanas, because the brahmanas are born to carry out or represent the law, right? Just like kshatriyas are meant to protect the people, so brahmanas protect religion, the kshatriyas protect the people, the vaishyas protect the cows. Right? So you get all three now together. Right? The two pillars of spiritual advancement, right? The cows and the brahmins. Everyone is under the full control of the Lord. He is quite correct in his action when he desires something to be done by someone, irrespective of the consideration of the particular case. Right? Something must be done. Unique cases are there. That is understood. But what you have to do is actually do it. You have to do something. It's not that it's different, don't know what to do, so we'll do nothing. Right? We don't talk about it, maybe it'll go away. You know, stuff like that. It's a good technique. You know, it's kind of like, you know, is he still there? Yeah. Like that. So, here, as we see, it's coming the Lord's arrangement. Because the important element of why devotees see it as the Lord's arrangement rather than these others is that it comes down to it. If I say, it's, oh, what happened? Oh, it's my karma. So what did I just say, technically, if we put it into philosophical terms?
Then I'm in control.
I'm the enjoyer. Karma. I am the controller. Right? That's exactly what you said. I and mine. So that's why the devotees look at it as Krishna karma meets as Krishna's arrangement for our, how you say, not for retribution, but for our reform. Right? You understand? Retribution means it's for reform, but people look more at the punishment side of it, that the justice as opposed to the reformation part of it. Yes.
Well, what about the Tatsidu Kampan, you know, the prayer by Brahma says that a devotee who keeps suffering the result of his past sinful, his karma, in other words?
Yes, but he's seeing it still, he's doing it for the Lord. But the point is the Lord is connected there. That's the important thing. You have to connect the Lord. Otherwise, see, as we work in, there's the transcendental knowledge is there. Then that's one of 14 books of the Vedic knowledge. The other 13 are aparavidya, means not transcendental, but very useful and very connectable to transcendental. That's the advantage of the Vedic scriptures. They're so easily connectable. You know, they connect everything, and they talk on every subject that there is. There's nothing left out, right? So then the difficulty is if you don't connect it to Krishna, even though it's Vedic, it's still mundane. Really nice mundane, but still mundane, right? So the astrology, you know, the Ayurveda, worrying about, you know, eating your spinach and don't cook it too much, this is all just straight up front mundane. Nice mundane, but mundane. So the difficulty is that unless it's connected, you don't get the benefit for connecting it, since it's indirect. right? This is here, a rock here, right? If this is connected to Krishna, it becomes spiritualized. If it's not, it's just a rock, right? And so it's different from the holy name. The holy name, whether I understand it's Krishna or not, if it's coming in the bona fide parampara, it is Krishna. It's not a matter of what is the quality. We always look at it still, I'm the controller. Yes, if I chant the Shuddha Nam, then the name has potency. No, the name always has potency. If you don't chant purely, he doesn't reciprocate with you much. That's the point. No, it's I give that power. You know, oh, how will, you know, he's not advanced devotee, so how can I get that power? I have to find for advanced devotee. No, the point is the name's the name. You have the faith, it's him. So that's the whole point. You know, it's just like, let's say, Jambaman, he had the Shamantaka jewel, right? He gave it to his kid to play with. Right? The little baby is shiny, right? You know, it's like this. And I guess they didn't have all the little baby, you know, baby rules about sharp corners and stuff like that, you know? Either that or they were more smart in those days, one or the other. So then Krishna comes along and understands the value of this. Jambavan just thought it's a shiny jewel. The kid just thinks it's fun to play with. They didn't know what it was. So if Krishna takes it from that kid, does that mean it's any less valuable? No, because it is what it is. Right? Isn't that what God's statement? Yeah. So that's the point. It's not that he is created by us. He's already there. So it's very, very... These points are very subtle. It's arranged like this by the Lord to see the perfect, how the executive work. He protects the cows and the Brahmins. As soon as he hears that there's something going wrong, immediately he's out in all force. Does that make sense? Okay. Yes.
Can I ask a question about the stone?
About the?
The stone, if you're not... If
the
you're
stone. Any particular stone? We have three stones here.
Which one?
Huh? Okay.
Everything is part of the Lord, but
yes.
Is that the impersonal aspect? Are we emphasizing now because we have to connect it to Krishna, the person Krishna?
Yes, because its point is it's all Krishna as Brahman. But the point is you don't get any benefit for that until you make that connection. You understand? But five items, then he comes directly as, so it's Sakshat, is directly himself as Bhagavan, whether you recognize or not. Right? It means the ducks in Regent Park, they're eating Mahaprasad. They don't, it's not that one duck gets and calls the others, hey, Mahaprasad, you know, and they all come running over and like that, wait my whole life for this. Yeah, like this. It's like they just take, they eat, they just, it's just to them something edible, but it's directly Krishna. So the point is but where do you get that directly Krishna? From the devotees. Right? And then from the instructions, everything else you can connect. So technically, everything's connected to Krishna. But if you're always sitting on the Brahman platform, then you don't have to worry about it. Then it's a matter of understanding his Brahman platform. That's just normal. You know, it's just like you open your eyes, you can see. That's normal. But then you look for something important. Right? So amongst what you can see, you look for what's of value. So for the devotees, what's of value is Krishna as a person, the Bhagavan aspect, rather than the Brahman. They're non-different. But it's the Bhagavan aspect, that reciprocal aspect, that gets you bhakti. Just understanding it's Brahman, that will get you liberated. But bhakti means it has to be Krishna, the person. So in these five forms, he's always there as the person. Right? Does that make sense? So that's the point. So the thing what we were discussing here with Prabhu is that many times devotees think, because I'm a devotee, everything I do is spiritual. No, because I'm a devotee, generally devotees, they do things that are spiritual. Not that what I do is automatically spiritual. It's generally the other way. Spiritual is what's pleased Krishna. I bring myself in line with that rather than whatever I do, I you know, say it's spiritual. Like that. So that's the whole thing. So otherwise, much of the things in the day-to-day life aren't spiritual, but are very easily connectable. Right? But if you don't connect it, it's not connected. Right? Meaning, it is Krishna, but you don't get the benefit till you connect it. But these other aspects, the holy name, the deities, the Bhagavatam, those are there because of the mercy of the devotees. Of course, it's ultimately Krishna's mercy, but we're getting them through the devotees. Therefore, whether the person recognizes or not, it works. That's why the importance of parampara. It's connected to the devotees. The devotees are important to Krishna. Anything connected to them, you get the maximum benefit. With him, he'll only reciprocate as you deal with him. But with his devotees, any dealing he considers as good. Right? It means favorable, of course, or at least neutral. Does that make sense? Yeah, so that's the fine point. This is the elements that Bhagavatam's bringing out that no other scripture does. Because other scriptures will work on this connection of these indirect elements are a very prominent aspect of their devotional process. Because if you're going to Vaikuntha, just doing that without a desire for results, right, naishkarmya, and you come in contact with a devotee, even though that's just what your process is, you're a devotee, and so there's some connection you can get to Vaikuntha. But if you want to get to Braj, then it has to be pure devotional service. It can't be just naishkarmya. It's not enough. So naishkarmya in the association of devotees will get you to Vaikuntha. Naishkarmya that's done to please Krishna in the association of devotees, so therefore it becomes bhakti. That will get you to Goloka. Is that okay? Yeah. Okay. Everyone is under the full control of the Lord. He is quite correct in his action when he desires something to be done by someone, irrespective of the consideration of the particular case. Right? So the Lord wants something to be done by someone, then it works nicely. It's not the worry is not who's involved, right? It's a matter of who actually does the thing. Like I mentioned that one time, I think when the temple in New York was in Brooklyn, right? So it was a bit of a rough neighborhood. It's one of those neighborhoods where you come and you park your car, you go inside, you come back, and the car's still there. Don't worry, they won't take the car, but they'll be on bricks and there won't be any wheels, the tires, right? Like that. And so, like that, then, you know, and there was a bit of friction between the devotees and the local boys, you know. I'm not sure why, whether we started it, they started it, but I'm sure that, you know, there's some history, right? You know, like that. And so then this is going on, and one day a whole, like, riot starts, this whole rumble between the devotees and these guys, and it was actually starting to get violent. And then, you know, all the really, you know, big, tougher, stronger, you know, more, you know, fight-worthy devotees were out there, you know, in the street and stuff like that. And it was going to get really bad. And then suddenly this really skinny guy who was one of the cooks, right, he heard about it. He came running out with one of the big, you know, spoons for stirring, you know, the sabji. And when he came out, he roared in the Sringadeva like that so loud, everyone just stopped. You know, and all the, you know, the ruffians just ran off. You know, it was just so... Okay. So that's the point. Whatever he desires, Krishna, that's what's going to happen. So it doesn't matter who the person is. Right? Does that make sense? Well, that's the point. One should mark well that in his philosophical discourse, Dharma did not name Kali as the cause of his suffering. Neither did he blame the Supreme Lord, right? So this is the trick. You know, it's got to be one or the other. It's either him or him. You know, somebody's got to take the blame right here.
It's not me.
Yeah. Now, as presented before Maharaj Pariksit, we just read that one. Right? Even though not a blade of grass moves without the sanction of the Supreme, Bhagavad Gita directly refutes that Sri Krishna causes the living entity's misery or enjoyment in the material condition. Nor does the Supreme Lord assume anyone's sinful or pious activities. It's not that he takes them. Right? Embodied beings, however, are bewildered because of the ignorance which covers their real knowledge. So he's not involved in that. He's sanctioning what the material nature carries out. So he's the ultimate cause. And, of course, it's his potency, he's the efficient cause. But the point is this, it's nothing to do with him. These are just reactions that come to you due to what you're doing and the mentality. Since the material world is to reform you, then the Lord arranges what will reform the devotee. For the non-devotee, it's just straight standard rules. Because if not, if it's not consistent like that, then people will get, they won't follow, right? You know, it's just like the puppy, you know, every time he pees on the rug, you whack him with the newspaper. Then after a while, he figures out you don't do this. But if one time you don't, he thinks, well, it's possible I won't get whacked. Right? So therefore, Krishna, the material energy, consistently, whatever you do, you get the reaction. Yes.
So then some would say that this is an argument that it's all just mechanical.
It is mechanical.
Yeah.
Because the point is your body's mechanical. Your mind's mechanical. It's just dead matter. It's a machine. Mm. So life starts at the soul. So everything below the soul is all mechanical. It's just mechanics. So the only thing real is the Lord interacting with the devotees. That's real, because then you're dealing with life and life. But otherwise, for the non-devotees, they think it's the body, interact with the body, and that's all what's life.
And that's why they suffer.
Yeah. You know? It's like you being permanently like on Skype or something. You know, you're never actually dealing with the person.
You know, that.
It's like we want to talk. Oh, just 1 second. Yeah.
Okay, I'm sure some do that.
Yeah. That's the sad part.
Yeah.
In the study guide to Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 15, we learn that Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita teach the same truth about the Jivatma, as well as about Ishwara, Prakriti, Kala, and Karma. The Gita verse cited above alludes to the ignorance that covers the real knowledge of the jiva as being the actual cause of the bewilderment about the reactions of papam and sukrita. So the soul himself is actually the cause. Right? That was that original, you know, point. Is that it's the soul, because he's desiring it. Because it's they desire it. But the point is they're still not the controller. But because they desire it and identify with it, you therefore have the responsibility and get the reaction.
Yeah.
That's why if the soul desires something connected to Krishna, there is no reaction.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. There is no reaction. Devotees say, oh, you can't do that, there's a reaction. There is no reaction. The point is does it please Krishna or not?
Mm-hmm.
Right? In the first canto, we have already met the following important verse that explains the same point. Due to this external energy, the living entity, although transcendental to the three modes of material nature, thinks of itself as a material product and thus undergoes the reactions of material miseries. Because he identifies that he is the body and mind, therefore you get the reactions on that platform. Because we identify that what I do with my body, what I say, and what I think, you know, or what I feel, these are me. So therefore, any action done in that, the reaction comes to you. But if you understand, I'm not these, I'm the soul, then where's the reaction? Like that. A devotee never holds the Lord responsible. For the conditioned soul's happiness and distress, suffering inflicted upon the conditioned souls is by his deputed Maya Shakti, or material nature. Maya brings suffering of three kinds, Klesha Traya, in accordance with one's past fruit of activities. This is the version of Bhagavat Shastra. Where is this footnote 8? Did we read it?
Yes.
We did, okay. To try to argue otherwise is to display the selfishness that one cherishes at heart. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur makes the following pertinent observations in Bhagavat Tatparya 2. What's Bhagavat Tatparya? That's his commentary in Bhagavatam? Or? Okay. The living entities who are averse to the service of the Lord try to become the objects of service in this material world so that they may become entangled in the wheel of fruitive activities. Such activities are most insignificant. When we try to become the enjoyer and engage our senses in seeking limited pleasure, we become contaminated and thus invite our own ruination. What is the proof of this? The spotless Purana, Srimad Bhagavatam, is the proof of this. There are innumerable evidences recorded in the Vedas and literatures in pursuance of the Vedas that support this conclusion. However, because the outlook of those who cultivate mundane knowledge is contaminated, Such persons do not accept this evidence. Right? So the Shastra says, and so if we say, oh, that doesn't apply now, it's Kali Yuga, or this is the modern age, so this is because of the cultivation of mundane knowledge. Right? This is the difficulty. That's why the modern educational system is weak, because it contaminates the soul so that when you get real knowledge, then you don't think that's real knowledge. There's another, in other words, if I can't see it with my senses, it's not real. I don't actually accept authority. All right? That's the whole point. Because the reason we can say science is an authority, because ultimately it's up to me to apply it and realize it with my own senses. So technically, even though we say science is the authority, we're not actually, it's not technically the authority. It just gives you an idea, then you apply it, and then you can see it. Then it's real. Because even the scientific point, I don't accept it unless I can see it. Does that make sense? So then the problem is that I always say the Vedic doesn't apply unless I can see it. But the problem is you can't see it unless the Lord gives His mercy. And He'll only give His mercy when you surrender. Yes.
Is it that a non-devotee will also accept it if it corresponds with his false ego?
Of course. I mean, that's what New Age is. Mm-hmm. New Age is basically just Vedic knowledge that fits into their, you know, into their sense gratification, some of the subtle platform. You know, makes things more touchy, feel a little more of goodness. So those who appreciate that element of goodness, you expand it with the New Age. That's all. So it's you know, you're talking at best goodness. It means the subject matter is goodness, but they're applying it in the mode of passion. They're going doing yoga because of what health benefit they'll get, not that they're supposed to, not because it's a process of upliftment. Right? The reason they want to meditate and be peaceful is because their mind is so crazy and it disturbs them. So they want that peace to, like that.
To be able to go out and do the same activities.
Yeah. So it's interesting. We noticed, because this last time we were in Finland, we had a seminar, but we had it in a yoga studio. Right? So it's just one yoga studio. The person's quite favorable in that, and they give us, you know, let us use the place. So it had, you know, it has various, it's quite a big place. So we were using one part of it. You know, so where you come in, there's the reception, there's the bathrooms, and then there was where we were using. And so for the first days, you know, because we're Indians, we're yogis, bhakti yogis, so everything's cool, all the big smiles and everything like that. But after two days like that, there was a sign up about be quiet, you know. Because what they couldn't handle, because they're all yogis and peace means quiet, sitting, meditating. They couldn't handle that we're peaceful, discussing things about Krishna. So we're standing in the hallway, talking, laughing, joking, talking about management and talking about money and all these different things. And they're sitting behind the counter and going, what kind of yogis are these? You know? So they put up a sign, quiet, you're disturbing the other yogis in the next room. You know, so okay. Like that. So they just, you know, so in other words, it's for their own purpose. So they don't actually understand what for, because it's devotees, peace is the normal platform. So then you go up from that. They're just trying to get from below that up to peace. That would be nice, yeah. Yes.
I'm also thinking for the devotees, it's a lifestyle. And for these people, it's just that particular 2 hours or whatever it is. And they want to really do it and then forget about
it. Yes, yes. And then reap the benefits. Yes, right? Exactly. You know, the peace of mind, then you can go out and see people smile.
So it's unnatural, actually.
Yes, yes. I mean, it's nice. And the nice thing about it is then they're favorable to us, because then they do yoga, we do yoga. Hey, you know, we got some. But in reality, like you say, it's not. It doesn't have any real value, because even if it's a better condition than, let's say, going down and, you know, running at the gym or something, it's maybe more sattvic. Its purpose is exactly the same. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's not that it's. So therefore, you just talk nice to those people. You can be a little more down home at the gym, you know, like that. Yes.
I did a seminar a couple of years ago for some New Agers, and they were very favorable and, oh, so exciting, and very, you know, from India. And then I did the same seminar the next year, and I was thinking, now we go a little more Abhideya, now it's time to do something and be practical. And they freaked out. They were very interested when I was just listening about some exotic and some, you know, but when it came time to apply it in their own lives, it's just no.
Yeah, so you just keep on like that and they'll get purified. That's why it's said to be a very slow process. you know, that's the slow path, right? You know, so one has to be very careful. But you can, you know, mention about, you know, about the chanting and that, because they don't mind chanting generally, you know. And if the prashad is something they can relate to, organic enough, you know, free range enough, you know, all that, then you know, it works. But basically, it's like that. Even though they're so intelligent, you basically can only give them what you can give, like the tribals. You know, like what was saying, Brahmananda was saying, Prabhupada says, when we go out into the, you know, into Africa, into the villages, says that, you know, you can't discuss philosophy, but, you know, but they love kirtan and love prasad. And Prabhupada says, don't worry about it, just give them that, you know, so... So that's your prominent thing. Then they like it. You're the guy that comes and does the kirtan and has the nice food, and, you know, like that. And, you know, you speak nice things, like that. It's good. Because, in other words, the bhakti sukriti is not enough. If having done that, then afterwards everyone freaks out, but one person comes up to you and hey, they've got enough bhakti sukriti, so they're the best man in the crowd. The other ones. Then you have to give, and you have to be very careful, because that group is the one that turns into Naradamas.
Yeah.
You understand? Muddhas don't become Naradamas. Yeah. That group becomes Naradamas, because they're smart enough to analyze and then be against. Yeah. So that's why you have to be very careful with them.
Actually, four came to the temple, and one came to Mayapur.
Okay, well then that's it. Works. So that's all you want. It's just like the other day. Remember that lecture Prabhupada gave, that famous lecture in Sweden at the university, about the four classes of men. You know, when it was just the thing at the time, you know, is that everybody's equal, and he was thinking of four classes of men. You know, in a gradation, not as different classes, equal. And so this one devotee, he from that whole crowd, he's the only one that became a devotee.
Yeah.
So it was worthwhile.
Yeah.
It was a good program. Yeah. One person became it. That's good enough.
Yeah.
Like that. So, yeah. So don't worry. You got five. So that's not bad.
Four.
Yeah. Oh, you mean you say of the four, one.
Four, one.
Okay. Okay. So still, that's not bad.
No.
And there's probably less people at the group. University generally means it's really big, hundreds and hundreds.
Yeah.
So see, it's a good proportion. Okay. A fully surrendered devotee is free from the onslaught of material. No, we're still up here. Okay. However, because of the outlook of those who cultivate mundane knowledge is contaminated, such persons do not accept this evidence. It is something like a person who is unsuccessfully trying to get water in the desert. Actually, there's no water in the desert. It is only a mirage, right? So in the mundane knowledge, there is no knowledge, there is no taste, there is no satisfaction. It appears there is, but there isn't. One should aspire for the actual goal of life. Everything else is unwanted and temporary. Such things create illusion in the minds of conditioned souls. And there's the illusion, I will get benefit. Because people will say, oh, the modern is so much better than before. How is it better than before? Right? You know, if we have, you know, a protonic family, we're doing pretty good. You know? Like that. You know, nuclear, hey, that's so, you know, how you say, you know, what do you call it? You know, what do you call it? 60s, you know, 70s, you know. That's it. Now we're into protonic, you know. Is there something smaller than the proton now? A quark?
Quark, yeah.
Yes, you know. You know, a nice quarkish family. Yeah. Okay. Actually, okay. Everything else is unwanted and temporary. Such things create illusion in the minds of conditioned souls. According to the opinion of many, the philosophy of impersonalism is topmost. But this is not a fact. This concept is full of contamination. It is impure, because contamination means it's not pure. It's not about the relation between you and God. It's about yourself. Because the point of impersonalism means I remain the controller and enjoyer. And I put myself in a situation, basically it's like the ultimate yoga studio. Right? You know, just no one plays the gong, you know, like that. You know. You don't have to worry about yoga mats. You know, it's cool. Like that. But it's just about yourself. So that's why it's contaminated. And the material knowledge is about what I can get from material nature. We're not talking about the elements of knowledge and the elements of liberation aren't useful in devotional service. But the point is, if you don't connect it, it's useless. Right? It's not that you connect. It's just like you connected your blender last week and it worked. But this week you go to use it, it's not connected. You can't say, well, it was connected last week. It's not connected right now, it does not work. That's the problem with apara avidya. If it's not connected, it's avidya. Immediately. It's not that, oh, it was. We go on, because otherwise, what is that? It was. Where is that was? In the past. So why doesn't it work? Because it's mode of ignorance. Mode of ignorance is always opposite of what works. So therefore, it won't work. But even though you present it very nicely, you're a good orator, you use all kinds of backup, quote, all kinds of different things, have a bibliography of 500, you know, references, it still won't work because it's not connected.
Yes.
It's that simple. But because of this material contamination, one can't understand it. Srimad Bhagavatam is the spotless evidence. In this literature, there is no opportunity for cheating religion, like personal sense enjoyment or liberation. Because they're cheating, they're about yourself. There is no network of selfishness in its teachings. Right? Because the network, you hide it behind something else, so it becomes this whole network. Because people who try to explain the Vedas, Samhitas and Upanishads, on the strength of their academic qualifications, are initiated into the path of selfishness. Their evidence and reasoning are full of cheating and thus totally unacceptable. Right? Yeah. A fully surrendered devotee. Yeah. So it's just as it is. That's the nice thing. A fully surrendered devotee is free from the onslaught of material nature. Lord Sri Krishna personally takes charge of his pure devotees and then mercifully gives them a token summary punishment. Since he had been put into doubt by the deluding energy, as well as by the influence of Kali, Dharma neglected to point out that his sufferings were the causeless mercy of the Lord, although he did not accuse Kali for them. Actually, the sufferings of the cow and bull had been arranged by the will of the Lord just to show Maharaj Parikrit's ability to give them protection as the ideal executive head. Sutta Goswami continued, being very satisfied by the bull's meaningful statements, because it's philosophy, it's proper contemplation. Maharaj Parikrit replied, O saintly one, in the form of a bull, you know the truth about religion. One who thinks that the perpetrator of an irreligious act is the cause of his suffering is just as ignorant as the miscreant is. Because you have understood this, you must verily be the personality of religion. As a devotee, you are ready to tolerate all kinds of misery, considering it to be God sent. For it is for this reason that you have not placed the blame upon the Shudra that was beating your legs. Footnote 9. In Srimad Bhagavatam 10.14.8, it is said, my dear Lord, the one who earnestly waits for you to bestow your causeless mercy upon him, all the while patiently suffering the reactions of his past misdeeds, and offering you respectful obeisances with his heart, words, and body, is surely eligible for liberation, for it has become his rightful claim. Prabhupada explains, he is always merciful, therefore devotees never take anything as not merciful. Tatte anukampam. They take everything from Krishna as sympathy. Anukampa. Tatte anukampam su samikshamana. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.14.8. One who can see this anukampa in reverse condition of life, the compassion of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, mukti pare sadaya bhak, his right to become liberated becomes guaranteed. If anyone accepts the mercy of God in any circumstances, and he does not do anything wrong to anyone, such person is guaranteed to be liberated. Right? So in other words, things happen to you, but you don't have to really react to that. Because the point is, it's not the person. That's the whole point. That's Dharmaraja's point here, is it's not Kali. Right? So, and it's not my body. It's not my conditioning. It's not the material nature. That's working under higher authority. It's not the demigods. They're only representative. It's not the planets. They're only carrying out what they've been required to do. You know? So therefore, you end up with the most viable of what he presented. Therefore, it's the soul. Because of the soul's consciousness, therefore, one is suffering. But so he left out the ultimate point of the Lord, right? And that, but he didn't blame Kali. Right? Okay, so therefore, there's not about retribution. That's why retribution is a common point for the general populace. That's the principle. The populace knows about it, you have to deal with it. So that is something that will make them satisfied. But at the same time, if you have an untrained populace, it doesn't matter what you do, it will never satisfy anybody. So along with what you do, it should be according to Guru Sadhu Shastra, and you have to train the populace. Otherwise, they are not educated enough to know what is the right thing to do when something's done wrong. That's the point. It takes qualification to understand justice. Right? If you're on the animal platform, animals, it's not about justice. Right? This dog took my bone, so he's the one that I fight with. Right? It's just that's what it works. Right? So coming up to Pranamoy, that's your subhuman. Right? You had animal as Anamoy, subhuman as Pranamoy, human as Manamoy. But it doesn't become human until then. So subhuman, there's traces. It has kind of, you know, it has that flavor. It's compatible. So we have to be... Yeah, how do we get into that? Yeah. So this thing is, he did something wrong, there must be reaction. That's what the animals think. This next thing is because you're actually just a sophisticated animal. You think like that, but you regulate it. It's not just immediately response. Right, there's a judicial system. But unless that judicial system is based on the Veda, then it's not human. It's subhuman. And so it doesn't really give the right thing. Because then the difficulty comes is each one has their idea what they want to get from the system. So therefore, you can never satisfy everybody. Right? That's what that's saying. You can please some of the people, some of the people... All the time. All the people, some of the time. You can never please all the people all the time. Right? It's just the way it works.
Yes.
Okay. The devotee is suffering from reverse condition. Then he is feeling very much obliged to Krishna. Oh, my dear Lord, it is your great mercy that I am suffering. This is the devotee. He is suffering and he is taking it as a great mercy of God. Tate anukampam. Anukampa means mercy. So does your mercy. Lecture on Srimad Bhagavatam 619, Los Angeles 22-6-1975. Because that mercy, you remember the Lord. Right? Because the tendency is things are good, we don't remember the Lord. Only when they go bad, now we start to look around, what's going on. I'm not in control. When it's going good, I'm in control, I'm the enjoyer. You know, so everything's right in the world. But as soon as something goes wrong, okay, now there's something wrong, now what? So the point is that we blame the other person, you know, or worry about is my karma, like this and that. We don't connect it to the Lord, then it's useless. So that's the point. He goes on with this because it's the Lord's arrangement. Like that. That's the important. You catch that? That's the important element. It's the Lord's arrangement, not because it's my karma. So what is my karma? Okay, but that's a little bit more, you could say, improved in the mind, but it's still not devotional. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. The only conclusion is that the Lord's energies are inconceivable. No one can estimate them by mental speculation or by word jugglery. Okay. I'm just saying you've got two quotation marks, no footnote.
Oh.
Sometimes because generally that's what I think it is.
Yeah, exactly.
It's actually a number most of the time. In his purport to verse 23, Srila Prabhupada writes, a question may be raised as to why a devotee should refrain from identifying an actor, although he knows definitely that the Lord is the ultimate doer of everything. Knowing the ultimate doer, one should not pose himself as ignorant of the actual performer. To answer this doubt, the reply is that the Lord is also not directly responsible, for everything is done by his deputed Maya Shakti, or material energy. The material energy is always provoking doubts about the supreme authority of the Lord. The personality of religion knew perfectly well that nothing can take place without the sanction of the Supreme Lord, and still he was put into doubts by the deluding energy, and thus he refrained from mentioning the supreme cause. This doubtfulness was due to the contamination of both Kali and the material energy. The whole atmosphere of the age of Kali is magnified by the deluding energy. So here it's magnified, and the proportion of measure is inexplicable. So it's material energy. We'll say, oh, it's Kali Yuga, we can't do this. No, it's the material world. That's the problem. Kali just magnifies it.
Yes.
Right? It's hot. Right? You go stand out in the sun, it's hotter.
Mm.
Right? It's not that everything was perfectly fine until Kali Yuga came along. It was still the material world, people are still in illusion. Right? It's just makes a conceited effort, he brings out the sinful side of materialism as opposed to the pious side.
Mm-hmm.
That's all. Because we take it, if everybody was doing everything nice and all that, then we can easily do devotional service. But because it's nice, there's a good chance we would not be involved in devotional service.
Yes.
Right? Basically, it's the, arta artarti, that is, our reason for coming.
Mm-hmm.
Like that. And there may be some you have questions you want to answer, but it's not necessarily that they're burning, inside. How many went to India to look for answers? Very few, like that. And jigyasu that's jigyasu. And jnani means you know Krishna's the Supreme Lord. You want to understand that. You understand? So it's a neophyte position. But from that position, you can take it to Madhyama. It's not that a karmi is a jigyasu. You understand? Or excuse me, the jnani. Karmi can be a jigyasu, but the jnani means he has knowledge about the Supreme. You understand? So you should be very careful. If we're interested, we have knowledge, that may be jigyasu.
Yes.
Then coming in contact, we hear. So therefore, now we want to know. So we associate, we get that faith, we do associate with devotees, we take up the process. Then by that process, we move ourselves to being fixed in that process. Right? Then that's good. Right? So basically, the ideal is everybody goes from whatever the first three ones at to the jnani. And then from there, goes to the madhyama. Right? Platform. So that's recommended. Yes.
Jnani is like the basis of neophyte devotee.
Yes, that would be, you could say, a nicely situated like that. But because the point is, one's to say, well, what does that got to do with us? But the point is you have all the Hindus,
yes.
Right? They have Bhakti Sukriti. They want to know because they've heard so many things. They hear. They want to, they actually want to know about. They've heard about and they want to know about them. So then they come in contact with them.
Yes.
So that would be more rare. Not that it doesn't happen. Does that make sense? And it's not that people aren't born in such situations. Means one is nicely situated here, but if the thoughts are impure, one ends up taking birth in, a non-Vedic environment. Right? Does that make sense? So that's why you see some, they come in contact with Krishna, immediately everything takes off. Because they're actually not from that background. Yes.
And then in the previous quotation that said some people know that Krishna is actually the ultimate doer, but they neglect that.
Yes.
Would that be then those persons who were born in Vedic situation, but then they just say, "No, I know everything. I don't need to hear any more about Krishna."
That would be yes. You could put that into that category. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't say that's the only one, but that definitely could fit there.
Mm-hmm.
Because devotees will do the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's like they don't want to hear about that, because then it means you have to, the conclusion's obvious. So one wants to, appreciate for a longer period of time the particular emotional anxieties or flavors that are there due to a disturbing situation, that it's just a matter of move on, do your service, and then that everything will correct itself.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of like, no, we have to have something that addresses this particular feeling. But no, that's just a passing feeling anyway.
Mm-hmm.
It's hot outside, you just wait. In the evening it'll cool down.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's not something you can do there. You know, stand out in the sun, jump up and down, say, I'm so hot. You know, something like that. And, you know, everybody else has got to come out there and stand with you. And, you know, yeah, it's so hot out here. What can we do? You know, you understand? So that kind of jazz is not so important. But it's popular, but, you know, it's not so important. The point is, it's just, okay, walk over in the shade. It's only 110, right? Better than 120, no? Yeah. Okay. Okay, Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur introduces the next two verses as follows. Maharaj Parikshit said, I know all your fortune and misfortune, which you have not told me. Please hear. Two verses, 24-25, describe this. Maharaj Parikshit addressed Dharma in the form of a white bull. Right? So Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, one of the things he does, also Baladeva Vibhushan, is that many times is that it's understood what's happening here. But if you don't understand what's happening here, then they put in, what are those little bits in the conversation that you understand what's the connection, the sangati. Right? So that's the advantage, is then we gain what is the sangati that they're able to see.
Yes.
Then we're able to get that benefit when they point it out. So they do this a lot. Maharaj Parikshit addressed Dharma in the form of a white bull. In Satya Yuga, your four legs were established by the practice of austerity, cleanliness, mercy, and truthfulness. Now, however, three of your legs have been broken due to rampant irreligion in the form of pride, lust for women, and intoxication. Because right? Those things will be, that means one can say, is, well, what about, you know, the other things? They come up, meat eating, gambling comes up, you have to be pride and intoxicated, you know, like that. Otherwise, they just don't happen. You know, why would you think, for my tongue, I can kill other living entities? It's not really good. It means people don't even like people killing each other for something that kind of has a value. You know, you have a war, and it protects your country, but people don't really like the idea. So just for taste, right, you know, then that's it. You are standing upon the last leg of truthfulness, and thus you somehow manage to still hobble along. Yet, since Kali is coral personified, and thus flourishes by deceit, he will also try to destroy your last remaining leg. Because coral comes up because of deceit, because someone's presenting one thing, but it's another. You know? Like that. You know, it was only driven on Sunday by an old grandmother to go to church. Right?
Sure.
It's deceit, right? You know? Like that, yeah. The following excerpts of Srila Prabhupada's purports are most helpful to our understanding of these verses. The principles of religion do not stand on some dogmas or man-made formulas, but they stand on four primary regulative observances, namely austerity, cleanliness, mercy, and truthfulness. The mass of people must be taught to practice these principles from childhood. Austerity means to accept voluntarily things which may not be very comfortable for the body, but are conducive for spiritual realization. For example, fasting. Fasting twice or four times a month is a sort of austerity which may be voluntarily accepted for spiritual realization only. Right? For other purposes, it's not recommended. But because it's recommended, that means everybody should be doing spiritual purposes.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And not for any other purposes, political or otherwise. Fasting, which are meant not for self-realization, but for some of the purposes, are condemned in the Bhagavad Gita 17:5-6. Similarly, cleanliness is necessary both for the body and for the mind. So austerity here accepts something that's voluntarily, which may not be comfortable. So that's the performance of your duties. You don't have to go out of your way to find an austere situation. Right?
Yeah.
But it has to be conducive for self-realization, so it can't be speculative. So then what's recommended? Perform your duties. In performing your duties, there's always going to be an uncomfortable situation. Basically, if things are going well, it means 50% of the time it won't be comfortable, 50% it will be. Then you can understand it's a nice balance. Something's going correct here. right?
Yes.
You know, if it's a matter of everything's going really well and not much problem, then don't worry. It's just a matter of time, because the balance will come. You know, if it's all bad and all that, don't worry. In time, it'll get good. That's just the way material energy works. Right? Yes. That's the, you could say, the sum and substance of the teaching of Yi Qing. You know Yi Qing?
Mm-hmm.
I Ching.
Mm.
Yes? Well, that's all it is. If it's bad, don't worry. You know, don't get too elated. It's gonna get good. You know, if it's too good, don't worry. You know, it's going to go bad. So, you know, be balanced. That's the whole point. You're trying to balance the whole. Okay. Okay, so simply cleanliness is similarly cleanliness is necessary both for the mind and for the body, because the mind is being, it's been created from goodness. So if it's not in goodness by being clean, then it becomes disturbed. And the body, if it's not clean, it gets sick, which means disturbed.
Yes.
Now, simply bodily cleanliness may help to some extent, but cleanliness of the mind is necessary. And it is affected by glorifying the Supreme Lord, right? So then in that clear state, lack of ignorance, then it's easy for the mind to do what it's supposed to do. Right? No one can cleanse the accumulated mental dust without glorifying the Supreme Lord. It's not going to go away. So you say, oh, you have to change your person, you have to purify. There's nothing else you can do other than glorifying the Lord. If you want someone to purify themselves, it's only by being exposed to the glorification of the Lord. There is no other process that will purify. The illusions given because people identify the actor who has performed the activity. And they say, he did it. Therefore, then they have those external show. Right? But it's only a show. We can say, no, it's real. It's as real as we are the body. Right? The body did the activity, so therefore the body gets a reaction, but it has nothing to do with the soul. So therefore, that's why it doesn't purify the soul. The soul will be purified when there is glorification of the Lord. Does that make sense? So that's why we see Bhagavatam is very different from other literatures. No, okay. A godless civilization cannot cleanse the mind because it has no idea of God. And for this simple reason, people under such a civilization cannot have good qualifications. However, they may be materially equipped. Right? So means qualifications are actually the character, not the skill. Nowadays, if you have the skill, then you're set. No, it's about you have the character, you're set. Right? Skill you can develop. Right?
This is also the modern education based on
it. Of course. It means it makes it work like that. But the point is modern education hasn't produced people that businessmen want to hire, therefore the businessmen to get qualified people have taken over the schools. Right? So they run the curriculum, they have the people in there that are going to get what they want. So in other words, it didn't work up to now. And anything that anybody's talking about, you know, in other words, older people who are talking this point, they're talking about from before, saying it works. But the businessmen just proved it doesn't work. Otherwise, why take over the schools? Why take on extra headache? You can just be making money. Like that. Not that schools nowadays don't make more money. But the point is it's still, they don't produce who they want. In other words, it was never practical. Law school, medical school, engineering, maybe. But anything else? Yeah. The Vedas warn us to go not to the darkness of ignorance, but to the progressive path of light. Yeah. The Lord himself also warns that the deluding power of material energy is too powerful to overcome. But one who completely surrenders to the Lord can easily do so. Right? In other words, if you're in the dark, that's why it mentions Upanishads not to go to the darkness, but to the progressive path. It's not that we're sitting there in the light and this dark comes and overtakes. There's no such thing. Right? It goes down well in movies and stuff, but it's no such thing. Darkness can't take over light. Right? Point is we're standing in the darkness. That's why it says go from the darkness to the light.
Yes.
That's the point. Yeah, so it's too powerful to overcome, but a little light, even the smallest amount of God consciousness, just dissipates the darkness. Okay. But one who completely surrenders unto the Lord can easily do so. But to surrender unto the lotus feet of the Lord is also not very easy. Such surrender is possible by persons of austerity, cleanliness, mercy, and truthfulness. Right? So if we go against these, then, you know, chances get less.
Yes.
Right? There's more shade. Right? These four principles of advanced civilization were remarkable features in the age of Satya. In that age, every human being was practically a qualified Brahmana of the highest order. And in this, and in the social orders of life, they were all Paramahamsas, or the topmost in the renounced order. By cultural standing, the human beings were not at all subjected to the deluding energy. Such strong men of character were competent enough to get away from the clutches of Maya. But gradually, as the basic principles of Brahminical culture, namely austerity, cleanliness, mercy, and truthfulness, became curtailed by proportionate development of pride, attachment for women, and intoxication, right? The path of salvation or the path of transcendental bliss retreated far, far away from human society. So here Paramahamsas, this is the mentality. It's not that they weren't doing their duties. Rishi Kardama and Kasyapa and them were performing their duties as householders in the Satya Yuga. Right? But the point is they're the principle of that detachment, that sannyas element, was there. So they were always doing that connection with the Supreme. Right? So Paramahamsas, but they were doing their duties. It's not that everyone was sitting under a tree in white cloth chanting their japa. Right? There was this, that they were Paramahamsas, that they were, you didn't require the whole Varnashram system to make it work. You know, you just collect things from the forest, this and that. You know, people are farming, it's working, you glean from the field. Hey, that's just, there's sufficient. There's no anxiety about maintenance like that. So you don't, because they didn't have to grow things. The grains naturally grew. What does that mean? It's not magic. I mean, it is, of course, that it's going on, but it's not magic. Because the point is, what does that mean? If grains are growing from a field on their own, what does that mean?
Bhumi is happy.
Okay, Bhumi is pleased. Yes, that's there.
The Brahmanas are doing the...
Okay, yes, okay. I was thinking a little bit more just, you know, how you say it? Blunt here. Generally, we go the other way. No, not the rain. Generally, it's the other way. I mentioned a thing talking about subtle and, oh, what about this? No. Means, that's like this. It means grain grows from grains, right? So if it growing means what's there in the field to start with? Grains. Why would there be grains in the field? No, that's the point. No one planted. So what does that mean? It means there's so much, that there's so much extra when people take what they require, that there's still left, so those grains fall off on the ground and grow in the next season. You understand? That makes sense. Or even if you even other seasons, there's also, you don't have to plow. I think trait that you don't have to plow or things like this is that you've sown, but then you grow, and then because you don't glean the field, and there's no poor people, so that it remains what's on the ground, even though you understand? Mm-hmm. And then it grows. So in either case, it means prosperity is so great. But the point is then the earth is, because she's happy, then she produces so much. Mm-hmm. You understand? So that's the thing, is that it's not... she's pleased and Lord's pleased is sufficient, and people don't take more than they require. So, you know, in that age, people weren't doing soma yagyas, so they didn't have to have 3 years of grains. You know, they just took what they need for the day, and that's it. So it works. Okay. Oh, no. Let's see if we're still there early. Okay. By the influence of the age of Kali, even a pauper is proud of his penny. The women are always dressed in an overly attractive fashion to victimize the minds of men. And the man is addicted to drinking wine, smoking, drinking tea, and chewing tobacco, etc. all these habits are so called, because here when they say etc., it's not just, we're just saying, because there's new things. Manu, because there's always, they're going to find something to get intoxicated with. So therefore, mana uses that term, or anything else that has this kind of effect. Like that, because he describes your various kinds of wine. But it's not that they don't keep going on and working out new ones. It's like the one I was told about, that there's this one, it's one of those, you know, how you say, seriously knocking on your backside alcohol, right? Is that they go, and it's very expensive, very rare. They go, and when the pear tree just starts, the buds of the pear is there, they take the bottle that they're going to make the wine in and put it over the pear so it grows inside the bottle. And then they make pear wine and then put that in there. You know? Like that. And they said that. And that was really a nasty one, right? So, but the point is here, is, you know, they don't go into it. You know, if it's made from pears, if it's made from apple, what if it's made from grapes? Or made from grapes? What if it's made from, you know, kiwi fruit? Yes, if it's made from kiwi fruit. What if it's made from a watermelon? No one makes it from watermelon. So, you know, you just go on. You know, it's just, it's not the point. The point is et cetera means anything else. Because these things are always there. Right?
Yes. Yeah.
All these habits or so-called advancement of civilization are the root causes of all irreligiosities, and therefore it is not possible to check corruption, bribery, and nepotism. So these three, pride, attachment to women, and intoxication. Man cannot check all these evils, right? And so then what's the Kali Yuga do? He influences, and then everybody wants to dress more openly, the ladies more, right? But, you know, men, who wants to see, you know, a beer belly, right? You know, it's like that. So men can't go less dressed than they've always kind of gone. There's a, women can, but not men. Right? That's just gross. Right? So the point is we're saying, no, this is freedom, this is this. Yes, no, this is Kali Yuga. It's not freedom. We're free. No, you're being used by Kali to do his work. Does that make sense? It's interesting how it works.
Right? Addicted to your own senses.
You get addicted to your own senses. Because the point is, it's about relationships. But by this system, relationships get put on the side. It's all about the body and sense gratification. And then people are less satisfied.
Yes.
And then their solution is be more wild.
Yes.
So that's Kali Yuga. That's Maya.
Just to change something.
Yes. All these habits are so-called advancement of civilization, because that's what they're presented as. The liberals will present these that society's advancing. See how much more developed we are.
Yes.
Like that. But, you know, it's not a matter of development, it's just a matter of the modes. I mean, it was back before the Victorian age, you know, it was like in very certain situations, if the woman was dressed, you know, from the waist on down very nicely, but she was topless, it would fly in certain situations, very formal situations, you know, sometimes in courts and things like that. You know, so this whole idea that, you know, it's like, that, oh, they were more wild in their dress before, just that they covered their legs. So, you know, it's more feminine. You know, a dress is much more feminine. It does more. You can do more with it. So these ideas is that it's just the modern civilization is seeming advanced, because in those times they were more advanced, seemingly. Then it would go regressive, then they would go back, the Victorian, then they would cover up again. You know, and then seemingly now they're more advanced. All it is the opposite. You know, that's all. So it's just, that's the thing. It's just called advanced.
So usually we take technology as the benchmark.
Yeah. Nowadays it's technology. Before, it means, then before it was, yeah, some kind of invention. Mechanics was there. But mechanics have always been there. That's who wins, who has the better, you know, catapult or better, how you say, weaponry, then wins, you know, like that. Especially when you only have a few people, right? It's not like a Chinese war where 100,000 people are on one side, You know, so then you can have, you know, how do you say, you know, 20,000 bowmen shooting an arrow at once. You know, it works quite well. You know, but when you're out there, you know, the big battle of wherever it was, you know, this place, and there's only 50 people on one side and 75 on the other. But in history, it's given a major battle that changed the history of the country. You know, yeah. You need more technology. Okay. All these habits, the so-called advancement of civilization, are the root causes of all irreligiosities. And therefore, it is not possible to check corruption, bribery, and nepotism. Man cannot check all these evils simply by statutory acts and police vigilance. But he can cure the disease of the mind by the proper medicine, namely advocating the principles of Brahminical culture or the principles of austerity, cleanliness, mercy, and truthfulness, right? Our point is that we're not going to do this unless it's connected to Krishna, but the points that we're talking about in how we, anomalies within culture, that will only be cured by this. And then no use curing society unless it's going to be connected to Krishna. Right? So both are there, but these are the both aspects. Therefore, the Bhagavat and the Vedic. Right? One deals with the culture, one deals with the nature of the soul. So in other words, if we're not the body, then we shouldn't have a problem that the body functions under the rules that apply to the body, which are the Varnashram. And the soul functions under that, which is the Bhagavat and Pancharatra processes. Does that make sense? So Pancharatra is where Vedic meets Bhagavat. Right? It works very nicely. Modern civilization and economic development are creating a new situation of poverty and scarcity with the result of blackmailing the customers' commodities. I'm sure what that means. Do you understand what that means? Blackmailing the customers' commodities. Yes, but I'm just saying, how do you blackmail it? There must be some system. In other words, there's some technique that's being used.
Is it that they're creating a taste for lower things?
Could be. Or they don't make it available or something, I don't know. In other words, there's some trick here that we're not even aware of, the Prabhupada is. Like, some of them we're aware of. But here's one that we're not even aware of. If the leaders and the rich men of society spend 50% of their accumulated wealth mercifully for the misled mass of people and educate them in God consciousness, the knowledge of Bhagavatam, certainly the age of Kali will be defeated in its attempt to entrap the conditioned souls. So that's what's going to work. We must always remember that false pride or too high an estimation of one's own values of life. Right? So one's pride means in oneself or the values you have, because the values are your conditioning. Right? So my values, these are what's really important. So too high of an estimation of one's own values of life rather than Krishna consciousness. Undue attachment to women or association with them. So undue. Just means what's natural, what's normal, what's the standard, that's there. But beyond that, right? In other words, you know, how you say, James Bond is agent of Kali. Right? You know, he's proud. He values himself more than anybody else. He's always with women, and he's always looking at something that's very old and very, you know, aged.
I saw some had actually investigated how many drinks he would go through during a movie and found out he would be dead. I mean, he would be able to survive. So.
Yeah, and then you add the women.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Special agent.
Yes, like that. And intoxication, because it was, you know, yeah, whatever. And intoxication will divert human civilization from the path of peace. However, such men clamor for peace in the world. The preaching of the Bhagavatam principles will automatically render all men austere. Right? So that means they'll follow their duties. Clean both inside and outside. So you take a bath and you remember the Lord. Merciful to the suffering. right? Because whatever you have that's extra, it's given to others rather than try to... Yeah. Mm-hmm. And truthful in daily behavior. That is the way of correcting the flaws of human society, which are very prominently exhibited at the present moment. So one could say, oh, this would be very difficult as a major organized thing, but here it's a matter of the individuals. Right? Anybody who's a leader in society, and that goes down even to small towns, is their leaders. You know, anybody who has facility, if that's somehow or another distributed and educated, doesn't say just take care of them. It's that and educate, because otherwise if you just give them facility, then, and they're not God conscious, they'll still make a mess of things.
Yes.
Because of greed. So without education, then it won't be. In other words, education is there and then people are taken care of. Right? Then it works very nicely. Right. So it's easy. Mm-hmm. It's not difficult. So Prabhupada's point is, all these things are very easy to accomplish. But you have to know what to do. Not get together big meetings. No, it's a matter of each individual takes care of these things. The king now addressed Mother Earth, who stood before him in the form of a cow. Your burden of having to maintain the world's population was certainly diminished by the personality of Godhead, and by others as well. When he was present as an incarnation, all good was performed on your surface because of his auspicious footprints. Now, O chaste one, finding yourself unfortunately forsaken by the personality of Godhead, you lament your future with tears in your eyes. As this age of Kali descends upon us, lower class men who pose as rulers rush in to lord over and enjoy you. Right, so this goes back, remember, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur said, Maharaj Prigat said, I know all your fortune and misfortune, where you have not told me, please hear. And now he explains. Because they've given indication, but he knows what that connects to. That's the whole point. And if you're educated, you know if this situation is there, then this is what's wrong. You know, these are the other things. Just like before, an Ayurvedic doctor meant you went, you sat down, you said nothing. He took your pulse and then told you what's wrong. Mind what? Not just, okay, you have this problem, that. He first tells you all the symptoms. Right? At night, you know, your feet sweat, you know, when you sleep, you're having trouble, this happens, that happens. You go, how do you know all that? That's because this is wrong with this and the you know, the liver's this, the digestion that, the blood. That's before. Then you think, okay, I'm going to take this medicine. You know, but when you walk in, oh, what's wrong with you? Oh, this is wrong with you. Oh, you don't know what's wrong with you. I'm the doctor. I'll tell you what's wrong with you. Then why did he ask? You know, it's kind of like, you know, it's like that. This is what they call here the false pride, right? As this age of Kali, this, okay, this is 26, 27, verses 28, 45. The surrender and reward of Kali. Maharaj Parikit, upon concluding his reply to Dharma, prepares to kill Kali. But Kali submissively bows down and surrenders to the king. Right? You could say, he's just standing here, talking. Right? He stops Kali, you know, he arrests him. Then he's talking to Dharma, they're discussing philosophy, then he's giving, you know, how you say, his support, you know, his condolences here and that, and everything. So why hasn't Kali in this time, like, escaped? Right? Remember, he went out with an army, so the army is making sure Kali's not going anywhere. Maharaj Parikit, upon concluding his reply to Dharma, prepares to kill Kali. But Kali submissively bows down and surrenders to the king. Maharaj Parikit spares Kali's life, but orders his banishment. Kali requests a place where he can live according to his nature, without fear. Maharaj Parikit gives Kali permission to dwell in five places, where gambling, drinking, prostitution, and animal slaughter take place, and where gold is hoarded. Genuine Brahmins and sannyasis should never come in contact with such places. After Maharaj Parikit sends Kali away, he reestablishes religion and begins his reign.
Will we go such places to preach?
You can if you can, if it works. But you have to be careful.
Yeah.
I mean, Nityananda Prabhu would go into the pubs and preach. You know, so like that. If you can do it. In other words, if people are becoming devotees and you're remaining one, then it works. Yeah. Yes.
Maharaj, maybe I missed something. You know, when the bull, he was not identifying anybody, and he was not identifying the Lord either. So it stayed at that, or?
No, because it was pointed out about the Supreme Lord. It was just that it was arranged with the Lord that Yoga Maya was there, so he wasn't making that connection.
But he was there in the actual conversation, or?
In Purikit Maharaj, okay. He brings it up, yes. Okay. Like that. But Dharma didn't mention it, but Purikit Maharaj did.
Okay.
Like that. And Prabhupada mentions it in the purport.
Fine.
Yes.
Before, this is the other
book
is she the same personality?
No. Just same kind of name. Why should you worship Kali? Well, generally we don't. We don't worship Kali Raj or Ma Kali. That's generally how you tell the difference. Does that make sense? So, neither way. I mean, they worship because they want material benefit. Right? Because by worshiping her, then supposedly, because she's material energy, then they're expecting they'll get some material facility. Right? But, you know, they haven't quite looked at the element that she is, you know, in one hand is the head of someone who is one of her devotees. That they don't quite connect the dots. But
What to do?
Yes.
In the other 80s, Kali Raj was not present.
No, it means he doesn't give his influence. He's around because he's one of the four avatars. And so during that time of during the Manvantara, then the same person is Kali Yuga. And so therefore for 71 Kali Yugas, he's the one in charge. It's like Dwapara Yuga. So Dwapara, yes. Treta, Satya, they hang out together. They're friends.
Yes.
Right? Because yes. They're the Yuga avatars. So they're. Yeah. Does that make sense? So it's just that this is his age, so now he does his work.
Yes.
So each one has their time when they manage it. Mm-hmm. Like that. And so this is his time. So then he runs the show now.
Yes.
Like that. But he can. But he has to. That, therefore, it's pointed out, he has to do his work. And he does his work through this pride, attachment to women, and intoxication. So therefore, because of that, then these four pillars of religion are destroyed. That's how he gets his work done. So he targets those areas. Now, if you are acting in a devotional way and functioning according to religion, then he can't act.
Yes.
Right, and so then how much you're fixed in that is how far back it pulls. Because Dwapara is dealing with half is gone, Treta with one quarter is gone, Satya nothing's gone. In Dharma. So how you religious you are, then it functions like that. Like that. So it's just that this is the time for it. So that's why they're given that duty. But if you act differently, yes, then you get a different effect.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
We can have the same spirit and Satya Yuga.
Yes. It's not an uncommon thing that facility like a Satya Yuga appears in another age. It doesn't mean that they necessarily live longer, those kind of elements.
Yes.
But according to qualities and quality of social interaction, you know, and self-realization, then it's on that platform. It's like something you do. That means after Parasram did his tour, then it was like Satya Yuga. Then this movement will create like that, Satya Yuga also. It may take a few more years, but you know, when we give it up attachment to, you know, Kali's tools, then we can usher in the age of Aquarius. Right, then until then, we can't. Right. The whole point is that we're distracted by the very things that Kali uses to make Kali Yuga. And so we're thinking if we'll use them and it'll get better, but it just gets worse.
Yes.
Right, because this is what he uses to destroy the situation. Yes.
So by Kali residing in these places with prostitution and they're magnified, they're impact on society is magnified.
Yes, it's there, but it means it's just one becomes affected by Kali Yuga, by these areas.
Mm. But they would be bad regardless of Kali would be residing there or not.
Yes, but that means, in other words, that's the only place he can reside.
Mm.
So he can do his work from there. That's why it's important that meat-eating, illicit sex, intoxication, and gambling are very much an accepted part of modern culture. Otherwise, then how does he work? If people reject these, then how does he function? So. Implacably determined to halt the progress of Kali, the noble and powerful Maharaj Parikit unsheathed his sharp sword to kill the miscreant Shudra, who was mockingly attired in the finery of the royal order. Srila Prabhupada explains that passing administrative resolutions and compromising with deviation will not stop the corrupting march of Kali. The administrators should not simply pass resolutions for anti-corruptional steps, but they must be ready with sharp swords to kill the persons creating corruptions from the angle of vision of the recognized Shastras. Right? Not just a matter of what the state says. It means state basis on the Shastra. Because the point is then it's the state that's in charge of executing that, making sure it happens, making it works, that the laws are applied. The administrators cannot prevent corrupt activities by allowing wine shops. They must at once close all shops of intoxicating drugs and wine, and force punishment, even by death, for those who indulge in habits of intoxication of all description. That is a way of stopping the activities of Kali, as exhibited herein by Maharaj Parikit, the Maharata. Right, it means if it's not available, like that, it works. So then, that's the point. Yes?
Maharaj Prabhupada, how can Srila Prabhupada say that our government now, if dear Maharaj Parikshit is not so very easily accepted, so he didn't do that?
But he surrendered.
Yes.
But the wine shoppers, also they surrendered to the government.
But it doesn't mean they run their wine shop. You know, it's just like this. Okay, you know, they're off the streets of Miami, right? They're not flying their airplanes. They can stay up in the mountains and supply cocaine leaves to the local villagers. Okay? Right. So the point is in this case he wasn't killed because he surrendered, but he's not performing his activities as he was doing. He has to stay in these places. You know what I'm saying? The local villagers have been chewing on cocaine leaves for, you know, thousands of years, so there's not a problem there. Right? It's just that you don't need those in Miami to be, you know, because they're not going to chew on them. It, you know, makes their teeth black and everything, so you refine it for them so they don't, you know. You don't see it. The teeth stay nice and white, right?
Problem solved.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? So that part you reduce. Does that work? Yeah. Mm-hmm. When Kali saw the seriousness of the king's intentions, he once cast off his imitation royal dress and bowed down his head in surrender. Footnote 10.
Yes.
According to Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, Kali thought, "It is not possible for me to fight with him. A Kshatriya cannot surrender. Therefore, giving up the king's clothing, I shall fall at his feet." Right? So as you know, in the dress of a Kshatriya, he could have fought.
Yes.
Right? Yes. But the point is he won't be able to fight with this person. And as a Kshatriya, he shouldn't surrender. So he threw off the dress.
Yes.
Very and interesting point. Yeah, and then surrendered.
Yes.
So, right? So that's a very interesting point. At this, the righteous Maharaj Parikit refrained from killing Kali. Smiling compassionately, the king said, "We have inherited the fame of Arjuna. Therefore, since you have surrendered yourself with folded hands, you need not fear for your life. But you cannot remain in my kingdom, for you are the friend of irreligion." Right, so there'll be a person, irreligion, like that. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains. The king considered, since he has surrendered, I cannot kill him. If I kill this evil person because of killing a surrendered person, irreligion, which has just appeared, will have spread. Right? In other words, the end doesn't justify the means. The point is, if you want to establish religion, you have to do it through religion.
Yes.
He will enter into me even and will not die. Because then you'll become irreligious. Right? He slightly smiled because he had not given up his anger. This plan has been made by the Lord. Today you have been protected by my hand, though I want to kill you. Right? So then he's thinking, okay, the Lord has a plan, because otherwise why would it work out like this? Because you'd expect Kali Raj, because it's based on pride, that he would try something. And then, you know, happily you could kill him. But he didn't. He surrendered. He gave up the dress, gave up his pride, surrendered. So then, as Arjuna would do, you have to take care. So you know, this is the trick.
Maharaj?
Yes.
Suppose Maharaj Parikshit has killed Kali before the discussion. It was a fault from Kali, from Maharaj Parikshit's side.
The point is you should know everything first, because you're dealing with justice. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
You know, it's like, you know, what if the bull and the cow had, you know, serious intent, to kill Kali. He was just peacefully walking down the road, you know. He was just, you know, going to his, you know, part in the drama, and he was attacked by this, you know.
One-legged,
you know, bull, you know, and he had to defend himself. But so you check first. But the point is you don't beat cows and bulls, so that immediately he's checked from that. It's not like that. And that's going to be in the wrong position. Now he talks with them because they are, you know, the ones that are having a problem. You have to make them feel comfortable. Because otherwise they have to protect them.
Yes.
So he's already stopped them from disturbing them.
Yes.
Now they're protected. Now he can turn to the justice element of punishing him for his crimes. Right? Plus you know exactly what it is because you should know all the aspects. Right? You know. So in other words, his point is that you want to expand Kali, you could do it another way.
Yes.
You know, don't bother. Okay, even though I want to, footnote 11. Yes, here's another one of those. This is even better, right? This
is 11.
Even more hard to. In verse 30, Shruta Goswami answers question 21. Why did Maharaj Parikshit simply punish but not kill the personality of Kali? The meaning of his answer is thus, as seen from Srila Prabhupada's purport to verse 30. Even an ordinary Kshatriya does not kill a surrendered person, and what to speak of Maharaj Parikshit, who is by nature compassionate and kind to the poor. He was smiling because the artificially dressed Kali had disclosed his identity as a lower class man. And he was thinking how ironic it was that although no one was saved from a sharp sword when he desired to kill, the poor lower class Kali was spared by his timely surrender. In other words, if Parikshit Maharaj decided he's killing someone, no one can spare them. But he was spared because of that timely surrender. Right, so that means you have to be quick. Between when you figure out the intent that he's serious, because otherwise he's a demigod, why would he kill him? But his point is, you know, I got my kingdom managed. You being a demigod, that's Indra's problem. You know, you're causing problem in my kingdom, and I'm taking care of my kingdom, so therefore I get rid of you. Right? You know, it's just like Prithu. Earth is supposed to take care of everybody like that. She's not. Therefore, even though she's the demigod, it didn't matter to him. Maharaj Parikshit's glory and kindness are therefore sung in history. He was a kind and compassionate emperor. fully worthy of accepting surrender even from his enemy, right? Because he knows how to deal with it. It's not that it was sentimental. Okay, yeah, you go on. It says, you know, can you use a rubber pipe instead of, you know, something like that? It won't hurt so much. You know, right? Thus, the personality of Kali was saved by the will of providence. You know, so it's the Lord, because he is, you know, how you say, an Avesha avatar, you know. So then he's, you know, supposed to do these things. Wherever you stay, Myers Prickett continued, greed, falsehood, robbery, incivility, treachery, misfortune, cheating, quarrel, and vanity will abound. You do not deserve to reside in a place where God-conscious people perform sacrifices according to religious principles for the satisfaction of the Supreme Lord. 32-34. In his purport to verse 32, Srila Prabhupada emphasizes that no matter the dogmatic outer form that religion may take in society, the four universal principles of religion must be enforced. Right? Even if people don't understand them, don't know about them, don't know why, they still have to be done.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Those four have to be established. Right? The principles of religion, namely austerity, cleanliness, mercy, and truthfulness, as we have already discussed. Notice this is fourth purport that he's brought this up just in these few verses. Right? You could say, it was already mentioned before. It brings it up again. What does that mean?
Important.
Repetition means it's important. Right? As we have already discussed, may be followed by the follower of any faith. There is no need to turn from Hindu to Mohammedan to Christian or some other faith and thus become a renegade and not follow the principles of religion. The Bhagavatam religion urges following the principles of religion. So in other words, principles of religion, that's Manamoya. Those are followed. We use those connected to Krishna. Right? Means any of the religious processes will work. Just the Vedantic is your most efficient, most exact. It has the greatest amount of knowledge.
Yes.
But the principles of your lifestyle, how you deal, that all of them say you have to be nice.
Yes.
Right? It means Lord Chaitanya says be tolerant, be humble. You know, then you know the Samaritan element is turn the other cheek. You know, so it's the same principle.
Yes.
Right? Yes, that's the The principles of religion are not the dogmas or regulative principles of a certain faith. Right? So in other words, principles of religion are beyond the particular application. Such regulative principles may be different in terms of the time and place concerned. One has to see whether the aims of religion have been achieved. Right? If they're achieved, then whatever they're doing works. Sticking to the dogmas and formulas without attaining the real principles is not good. So in other words, if the religious principle you're following is not working, then why stick to that one?
Yes.
Right? Does that make sense? That's the whole point. That's why the Vedicas are recommended. But it's not about changing religion. It's about changing one's consciousness.
Yes.
A secular state may be impartial to any particular type of faith, but the state cannot be indifferent to the principles of religion as above mentioned. Right? They have to see that these things are established. But in the age of Kali, the executive heads of state will be indifferent to such religious principles. And therefore, under their patronage, the opponents of religious principles, such as greed, falsehood, cheating, and pilfery, will naturally follow. And so there will be no meaning to propaganda crying to stop corruption in the state. His point is that things go corrupt, state complains about it, but what's the point of complaining? Because you're allowing the very roots of it. You don't follow religion, corruption will come. You follow religion, corruption won't come. Sutta Goswami comments here that when Kali received this order from Maharaj Prickett, he began to tremble with fear, as the king loomed threateningly over him, just like Yamaraj, footnote 12. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains, Prickett had his sword raised. Kali trembled. This showed his great intelligence in protecting himself. He felt, he is about to kill me. the intention of the king was, if he does not, if the intention of the king was, if he does not follow my order, I will kill him right now. That is my desire. If he obeys my order, though I will not kill him, I do not have any fault. Right? So in other words, if he does what he's supposed to, then it's been corrected. That's the point. Right? It's not about that the dogma that it has to be followed. It's about the result is gained. Okay. Kali pleaded, O chief among protectors of religion, since you are the emperor of the entire world, wherever I may go, I will see you with sword in hand, ready to punish me for my sinful activities. Even though I am your enemy, because I have surrendered unto you, you should allot me a place of residence where I can live peacefully under your protection. Right, so even there, enemies are protected as long as they follow the rules. They get out of hand, of course, there's trouble. That doesn't mean you're not protecting yourself.
Yes.
Right? Since you know Kali is around, now you'll see that the people are very nicely engaged in religious activities. You know, by education, by training, then they're not proud, they're not attached, they're overly attached to women, they're not indulging in intoxication. Thus being petitioned, Maharaj Parikit agreed to allow Kali to live where gambling, intoxication, prostitution, animal slaughter were being indulged in. However, since such places practically did not exist within Maharaj Parikit's kingdom, Kali felt cheated. Yeah. There is no place. So he must feel okay now, right?
Yeah, it's doing better.
He begged for something more. In response, Maharaj Parikit finally agreed that he had lived where gold was being kept. For in such places there is invariably falsity, intoxication, lust, envy, and enmity. 35-39. Footnote 13. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur recognized these two verses from chapter 17 under the Prayojana section of Bhagavat Arkaramichi Mala. In chapter 8, titled Bandha Jiva Lakshana, Characteristics of the Conditioned Soul. Meaning, it means these characteristics of the conditioned soul. Falsity, intoxication, lust, envy, and enmity. So these are the things that keep one here. You get rid of them, then you act as the liberated soul. In his purport to verse 38, Srila Prabhupada contrasted the four principles of irreligion with the four principles of religion. The basic principles of irreligiosity, such as pride, prostitution, intoxication, and falsehood, counteract the four principles of religion, namely austerity, cleanliness, mercy, and truthfulness. Right? Yes.
There is a continuation to that.
There is.
Oh, there is. It's not a continuation.
It's not, because it says the 39. Oh yeah, no, that's. Yeah, no, it's just it's the same thing's already been said. It's just that here it's pointing out which verses it is. Well, this one it's putting it together. Pride, prostitution, intoxication, and falsehood counteract the four principles of religion, namely austerity, cleanliness, mercy, and truthfulness. The personality of Kali was given permission to live in four places particularly mentioned by the king, namely the place of gambling, the place of prostitution, the place of drinking, and the place of animal slaughter. Notice in here is pride and animal slaughter go together. Yeah. Right, because that brings that. Because you're proud, so you think you can do anything you want. Mm. You know, kill anybody you want, anything. You know, it's fine. Srila Jiva Goswami directs that drinking, against the principles of scripture, such as the Sautramani Yajna, associating with women outside marriage, right? The Sautramani. So you have these ones where the intoxication is part of the thing. There's so many rasas there. you can take one drop. Yeah. So outside of one drop, then that's too much. Yeah. So either it's really good stuff, yes, or you know, the point is nobody gets drunk, right, intoxicated. Because right, the point of it is to go to the heavenly planets. Mm-hmm. Association with women outside marriage and killing animals against the injunctions of scriptures are irreligious. Right? Mm-hmm. Right. So this is the thing. So we see is that there is position for them in the Vedic culture, but they're regulated. Right? And they're regulated by these different things. So you're associated with women outside of marriage. That's what it's talking about.
Yes.
But then it's irreligion. Right? Within the marriage, that's going to be how much you're able to, you know, how you say your own personal development. But the other one is actually irreligious. Does that make sense? You have to make a distinction here. You know, somebody's like that. And then here is that, how you say, killing animals against the injunction of the scriptures. So in other ages, they could sacrifice animals in the sacrifice because they had the mantras, they could immediately give them human birth. But in these ages, they don't know them, so you kill the animal, you've just killed the animal. You know, no other benefit is gained. So therefore, it's not allowed in this age. Plus, it's just for karmakandis. Anyone serious about spiritual life doesn't generally get involved in this anyway. In the Vedas, two types of injunctions are there for the pavitras, or those who are engaged in material enjoyment, and for the nivritas, or pravritas and nivritas, or those who are liberated from material bondage. Right. So we're nivritas, but within that we have, you can engage the path of nivritti in the path of nivritti, or the path of pravritti in the path of nivritti. Right. So devotees, you know, even as householders, is still pravritti, but within nivritti.
Yes.
It's not that they're pravritti like the what we're talking about, the karmis.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're different.
Yeah.
The Vedic injunctions for the pravrittis is to gradually regulate their activities towards the path of liberation. So the devotees will use it, and it just hurries things up because they're on the path. It's already they're on the quick path. It's just assists in making it more efficient. Right, but for the materialist, it's a very slow path.
Yes.
Right, because they're only engaged in the pravritti activities. There is no nivritti.
Yes.
Right, so gradually regulate their activities towards the path of liberation. Right, so nivritti. Therefore, for those who are in the lowest stage of ignorance and who indulge in wine, women, and flesh, drinking by performing sautramani yajna, association of women by marriage, and flesh eating by sacrifices is sometimes recommended. Sometimes it's not the standard. We don't think, oh yeah, no, it's there. No, it's not this. Such recommendations in the Vedic literature are meant for a particular class of men. They're not meant for the cultured people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just like, for example, let's say in India, then. The use of marijuana was quite common amongst a certain class of men. Cultured people, it was not even a point of discussion. So it wasn't a problem. It was neither illegal nor was something that you did. You know, so it wasn't fashion, and nor was it illegal. It was just something only low class people did. You know, so that's the way it works. You know, these things where the irreligious elements are regulated, that's meant for lower class men who can't function in the regular, regulated environment. Yes?
So if people are following these regulated ways of engaging, does that not have an influence
on that? You're on the border there. It's because it's a mixed, naturally, because of the one. Why are you doing it? Because of the bad qualities. But that you're doing regulation, that's going to cultivate good qualities. So if you're in good association, naturally progress, and then one will give that up for higher forms of sacrifice. Does that make sense?
So what about the earlier ages? when people get indulged in intoxication.
But generally, it's more restricted situations or more just low class people. It's not a standard thing of behavior.
But I mean, like in the tribal community.
That tribals are tribals. That you don't worry about that tribals are sinful.
No.
You just worry that tribals don't bother anybody else. Like one tribe shouldn't bother another tribe, and they shouldn't bother the villagers. Like that. So they're out in their place, and they're safe there. As long as they follow their own rules, right? And that doesn't bother anybody else's following of their duties, so what's the problem? Does that make sense? If they're out in the forest and they go shoot themselves a wild boar, you know, and while they shot the wild boar, he was digging up truffles, so then, you know, hey, you know, it's, everybody's happy. But he's not going and bothering, you know, the villager is taking his cow or something. You know what I'm saying?
So wouldn't that mean that Tadiji already has an influence in those areas of the previous age?
He's always there. Means that element's there, but it's not. He's not trying to extend it. It's just there's always going to be a class of men who is uncultured. It's always there. Every age, you always have them.
Yes.
You know? Yes.
So gold seems to be an exception, though, where it can infiltrate into the higher classes and even into...
Yes.
So the question...
But then it says hoarding.
Oh.
It's not that just gold is there.
I see.
It's where gold is hoarded. Gold is a natural part of human culture. But where it's hoarded, that's where the problem comes out. Because then your greed starts. And then greed comes all these other things. Such recommendations in the Vedic literature are meant for a particular class of men and not for all. Right? In other words, if you want to be progressive, you don't get involved. But because there are injunctions of the Vedas for particular types of persons, such activities by the pavitras are not considered adharma. It doesn't mean it doesn't contaminate the consciousness, but it's not adharma. One man's food may be poison for others. Similarly, what is recommended for those in the mode of ignorance may be poison for those in the mode of goodness. Srila Jiva Goswami Prabhu, therefore, affirms that recommendations in the scriptures for a certain class of men are never to be considered adharma or irreligious. Right? Manu goes through that whole thing, that killing the animals, you know, and sacrifice, then is not irreligious. It's not that you're not going to get a reaction, means, but you won't. You'll only get one reaction. You kill the animal, next life he'll be able to kill you, but it's only a one-to-one.
Yes.
But if you kill him outside of that, then for as many hairs on the animal's body, that's you're going to be killed. So then that's sinful. That's irreligious. The other one is religious, but no one said religion's going to get you out of here unless you're connected to Krishna. Right? So in a very nice way, you'll stay here. But such actually, they're not never to be considered adharma or irreligious, but such activities are factually adharma, and they are never to be encouraged. In other words, it's adharma, but because you're doing it according to scripture, it's not counted as adharma. But you have to do it exactly according to scripture. You mess up, it doesn't work. It's not like devotional service where you have leeway. It's exact, you know, those kinds of things. The recommendations of the scripture in the scriptures are not meant for the encouragement of such adharma, but for regulating the necessary adharma gradually towards the path of dharma. So it's not that, oh, it's okay to do. No, it's for those who are going to do it anyway to regulate it so that they can progress. That's the whole point. The point, Brahminical culture means it's progressive. So even, as Prabhu was asking, even the tribals, then they will pick up something. In other words, if the tribals are protected and they're dealt with, you know, appropriately, then they take on and like to do things that those who are cultured do. So you see, they'll like to come to festivals and other things like this, and they'll, you know, develop that religious mood and things like that. But in their day-to-day life, it may be quite sinful. Right? But if they're engaging that according to the religious principles, then they get purified. So that eventually, purified means they eventually give up the need to perform that adharma. Yes.
Can we say they have maybe the skill but not the character for religious activities?
Skill means it's come from training. Mm. You know, so the soul can be engaged, but without training, then they won't be able to generally don't apply it into their conditioning.
So the performance will slowly generate the character.
It's slow, but it's very slow because it's not there in the conditioning. So it's just by association. So they get attached to, you know, some people, some few who are religious. So then the next birth is better, and then slowly goes up. But if you're engaged in devotional service, then it generates those qualities. Yes, that works very nicely. Mm-hmm.
Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki, Jai Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanta ki.